Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Trash Mix Podcast, where we talk about very obscure Mexican films of the past, you know, all the good shit, not the whack shit. You know, I always tell people, I don't talk about that boring shit, that whack shit. I only talk about the best. And we're going to talk about some more slashers in part three here. And which one are we going to talk about first, Joey?
Yeah, so we're doing, this is episode three now, and we got two more titles. The first one is Agarrote Limpio, and the second one is, what is it, Vacaciones Sangrientas, right?
Yeah, Vacaciones Sangrientas.
And, you know, I think so far, there's been a pretty good response for the previous two episodes, at least.
Yeah, people, I noticed, were adding Bosque on their watch list on Letterboxd.
I knew that. I knew Bosque and Masacre were going to be the two that everyone's going to like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want to watch those ones.
Monica, it's like they're still intrigued by it for some reason. Even after I said it's whatever, but, you know, we'll see. Either way, that's good, though. People are noticing, though.
And that's really what we want. We want people to, you know, if they're listening, you know, watch the movies. And hopefully you guys are looking at the show notes because some of the links are on there for you guys to watch it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, you know, it's the new episode and we got two new movies and I don't know if these are slashers or not, man. We gotta break them down.
Apparently the first one is, I don't know though, but I don't know how many times people have told me that was a slasher and I was just like, really? And then,
well, I think it's because of the cover, the box art on the
whole concept too. It sounds like it could be, but I don't know. Well, Joey will break it down.
Yeah. Before I even break it down, yeah, I'm just going to straight up say that this is not a slasher.
No.
But anyways, look, we're talking about Agarrote Limpio, which was from 1986. English title, which I don't know if I like the English title.
Yeah, it came up in a video release from Condor Video, and I was like, the fuck, by hook or by crook?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good title, but I don't, it's, well, for one, it's not really a good translation for the actual title in Spanish, which basically just means Agarrote Limpio is like a clean, like, club or, you know, handheld instrument or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that title fits more because there's not a lot of kills in this one. This is more of like a police procedural thriller comedy.
Yeah. just barely enough comedy in there.
Just enough, right? And I guess, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit, but, you know, it's, I think it falls more into, and this is a very layman way of I guess, at putting like a specific label to it, but if I had to, I would say this is like a giallo light fichera comedy.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, more like a giallo.
But even that, like, it's more like it doesn't really follow like the rules of a giallo.
It has some imagery, though.
Ways it does, but you know, when you think of a giallo, you don't think of, like, you know, the cops in a giallo movie are just non-existent until the end where they come and explain the whole whole plot. You know,
this is centered on the cop mostly.
Exactly, and this is all, you know, it features a cop. So, yeah, Garrote Limpio, 1986, directed by Julio Ruiz Llanesa, who was known for directing ficheras and action movies.
Yeah, that's literally all his career. He started like, yeah, in the late 70s, early 80s. He produced two serious movies. He didn't like them. I was reading it on the director website, like Mexican director website. We'll link it on the show notes. He said that, yeah, he didn't like the reception. He just thought they were boring. And he saw there was more action going on with films like, you know, the action and comedy stuff. That's where the money was rolling to. So he's like, I'm going to do those. Fuck that.
You know, it's sink or swim, right? You can make movies for yourself all you want. But, you know, sometimes people want to just make money. And at the time, you know, whether people like these comedies or not, the ficheras were fucking huge. And action movies, the same thing. They were fucking, that's what people wanted to see.
That's where he noticed that was where the money was coming in. You know, this art stuff, it's important, sure, but he just didn't. Yeah, he didn't see the appeal. And he's European. Keep in mind, he's from Spain originally.
So
you would think he would be into more of that stuff, but nah, he liked the sleazy shit.
He came to Mexico and became a Mexican.
Exactly. hey, he died in Mexico. So he died in Mexico.
Written by Pancho Sanchez, who wrote a famous Antonio Aguilar movie, Triste Recuerdo, which, you know, some of you may or may not have, you know, piqued your interest when we talked about him on the on the previous one of the previous episodes for Marcados, the home state episode.
Yeah, we definitely got to do an episode on
Antonio. Oh, yeah, 1,000% we will. I also want to point out the music that was done by Carlos Torres, because the music and the soundtrack in this was fucking dope.
Yeah. Like guitars, right?
Yeah, it's like real, it's like bass driven, like funky. Even has like a little bit of a drum break in it. Like the soundtrack was fucking dope. Like to me, the soundtrack kind of lends it into like the thriller part of the movie more so than the fichera comedy part.
Yeah, like the opening, it's like the guitar.
Yeah, it's like it's I mean, it's a very it sounds like an Italian, you know, 70s giallo soundtrack. Like like it's fucking sick. Here, I'll play a little clip of it right here. Fucking dope. What can I say? One thing that I also noticed too, the assistant director on this was Damiana Costa Esparza, who I would assume directed like the violent sequences of this movie.
You can tell, right?
Yeah, because the violence in this movie, when there is violence, it's fucking done so well.
Yeah.
And I think that probably lends into why people think that this is like a slasher movie. Because those scenes are pretty brutal, I would say.
Yeah, especially that opening scene. That opening scene, immediately, if you watch here, like, oh, is this a slasher?
I mean, yeah, it starts off, like, in the dark. A woman is being chased and gets a fucking ice pick straight to the neck. And, you know, granted, you can't really see shit because it's dark as fuck.
Yeah.
But you can see a little bit of blood coming out, you know. But it's like, okay, obviously, Damiana Costa did those parts because Julio Ruiz was like, yeah, you deal with that shit, I'll deal with the other stuff.
Exactly. This was his first foray into horror, like Yanessa, more or less, into violent stuff. So he was still getting familiar there. So, yeah. Of course, Acosta came and it probably showed him the way.
And, you know, if that name sounds familiar, which it really should, because we've already talked about him, you know, plenty of times, but. You know, he was the director of Violador Infernal, which is a Vinegar Syndrome release, one of the grimiest movies you can ever watch.
Remember, we had two walkouts for the movie.
Exactly. You know, Venganza de los Punks, another, you know, savage, kind of wild movie. And Fiscal de Hierro, which you also showed on that same festival, the first Trash Max festival, which fucking kills.
And as I said before, Damian, he was a very serious director, and then he used to be a stunt coordinator, so he always was very serious about that. You know, he wanted to make the violent scenes look violent and as realistic as possible. No money was spared. Well, maybe some money was spared. They were kind of cheap, but you know what I mean. But he really did try to make everything look real and serious, and he even hurt himself, like I said in the Punks episode. He would hurt himself making these movies.
And honestly, if I was an actor, that's exactly what I would want my director to get in the trenches with me and fucking, you know, pull this shit out, get injured, fucking, you know, whatever the case is. Like, if you're willing to do it, I'll fucking run through a wall for you too, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, let's talk a little bit about some of the players in this, because there's some pretty big names attached to this as far as the cast is concerned.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
The main actor, Rafael Inclán, who, you know, primarily known as a comedy actor. I mean, he got his, people know him. And this is why I would put Garrote Limpio as like a, you know, a fichera comedy style. Whether it doesn't go directly into the fichera style comedy, but it lends into that, because he got his start, his name was built on the fichera comedies of the late 70s into the 80s.
Yeah, he was literally in the first fichera movies, which was Bellas de Noche.
There you go. See, and if you don't know the name, if you're familiar, if you've seen enough Mexican comedies, you'll definitely recognize his face. He has a pretty
very
distinct face. Yeah,
it's just obvious when you see him. You're like, okay, there's Inclán.
Yeah, and you know, he comes from a lineage of actors, and
yeah, that was the crazy part. And then, well, you go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I mean,
there's more to it than just his lineage.
Yeah, he, you know, his parents, you know, were actors. You know, I guess his mom started a little bit later in life, but his dad was like started in the golden age, right?
Yeah, he was a golden age actor. Played like bad guys mostly.
Yeah. He's cousins with Alfonso Zayas, who we talked about in our Fichera episode. So, you know, go back and listen to that if you haven't. Yeah. Absolute legendary comedic actor in Mexico.
And then the other actor in the movie is his cousin, too.
Yeah.
Padilla Choforo. Raul Padilla Choforo. That's his cousin, too.
I mean, it's... You know, it's a family affair. What can we say? It's the same thing we've been saying since episode one, man. There's like family connections in every fucking movie that we're talking about.
Literally, yeah.
But yeah, and you know, he dated the co-star of this movie.
Yeah, you could tell this was when they were dating. Like the chemistry there was very obvious.
Yeah, and she's none other than Maribel Guardia, who is one of the premier. Female actresses of this time. You know, she's very well known. Obviously a very beautiful woman. She's not actually Mexican. She's from Costa Rica. We talked about her in episode two, a little bit, but we'll eventually go deeper into her filmography, of course. But yeah, she's, I mean, extremely well known actor. Yeah, everyone knows
Latin America, they know her for sure.
And she plays his girlfriend in this movie. I didn't even say his name. In this movie, Rafael Inclán, his character's name, one of the best names I've ever heard for a character, Felipe Fierros. I just thought that shit was absolutely hilarious.
His girlfriend, Susanna.
Susanna, yeah. Typical name, right? But it also has Susanna Camini, who plays Miriam Limus, as they call her in this movie. But people would know her because she was a staple for the Juan López Moctezuma, who, you know, very obviously directed Alucarda Yeah, she played Justine in Alucarda, the main girl on there. Or I guess the co-star, if you want to say Tina Romero was the lead in that. But, there's a couple more legendary. You know, Wolf Ravinsky's is in this. He plays like a drug lord, criminal, like mastermind, I guess you can say.
Carlos Ratzinger, another old guy.
Yeah, he plays the comandante, you know, the commander of the police force. And he's like Felipe Fierros' boss. Yeah,
Lily Aragon, and then the antagonist, maybe, Arsenio Campos.
Yeah, he plays Dario, who is one of the red herrings in this movie. Yeah. So, like any good slasher, there's a couple red herrings in this one. Yeah.
Good cast. A lot of big names here.
For sure. So, I mean, it's like, with all of this in mind, you know, you look at the cast, you know, primarily known for, you know, comedies. And you have some actors who were, you know, known for, like, the horror stuff. So, it's a very good blend of cast to kind of fill out these roles and how, you know, these characters, you know, lend themselves to each genre that I guess this movie's trying to be. But you know, it's just a simple story of a serial killer's on the loose. He's specifically after women, you know. But the only problem I have with this is that there's not really a lot of kills in this movie to consider it a slasher film.
Yeah. That opening thing, you're like, oh, maybe this is the first of many. But then you're like, it takes a while for another one to go happen.
There's two kills by the, you know, the killer in this movie. And then there's three other kills that Felipe Fierros, he'll put it under his death count because he, obviously, he's a cop. So he gets into a shootout and he kills three people during a drug bust. So if you want to consider that part of the death count, sure. But in reality, there's only two, like, savage kills in this. So, I mean, that alone is a strike against it to consider it a slasher in my eyes. But, there's a couple red herrings. Like I said, you have Dario. You have, there's a creeper in the beginning of the movie. So it starts, obviously, with the kill. We get a little bit of a glimpse into Felipe Fierro, the character, right? He wakes up. You know, all disheveled, and he's fucking kissing, like, he's kissing, like, Playboy model pictures that he has hanging on his wall, you know, takes, you know, tiny-ass little showers and shit, and then he gets the call to learn that he's gonna be investigating this, this case, and he has to find the murderer, and his girlfriend, Susana, is a reporter, so she's in to help him.
Amor, qué dicha que te encuentro.
¿Por qué?
Mira, llamó el comandante. Salaste un caso importantísimo, mi amor.
Fíjate, asesinaron una muchacha de esas pipiris nice y el caso es de una tal señora Lemus. ¡Ay, mi amor! Mi vida. Mi amor, tenemos que ir a hacer el amor.
¿Amor ahorita?
Sí.
¿Por qué?
¿Cómo que por qué? Para que mañana amanezcas como tu apellido. Vente.
No estás loca, espérate, no.
Mi amor, vente.
No, 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 mi vida, no puedo. Voy a tener que trabajar.
¿Cómo no?
Me vas a matar, hombre. Yo no quiero, no me quiero.
But he's just a jokester the whole time. Like, I don't think he takes any. I mean, I guess towards the middle he starts taking it serious, but you know,
I mean, yeah, he's just kind of goofing off, or you know.
Yeah, I mean, he has like his buddies in the beginning of the movie. Yeah. They go to a bar. They're all just drinking. Yeah, you know, cracking jokes with the little newspaper boy.
Yeah.
But then when he finally gets to the scene of the crime, that's when we see the first red herring. This creeper guy. Susanna kind of walks off and she's starting to, because she's a reporter, you know, she's going to go start taking pictures of the crime scene and shit. And she sees this like fucking fat, like drunk, you know, homeless dude fucking creeping through the trees. And yeah, she starts screaming and shit. And that's be like, okay, well, you know, that this is going to be the first guy that they want us to think is the killer, because he's there at the crime of the scene watching. And typical, right? Serial killers, they always come back to the scene of the crime, you know. That's FBI 101.
Quédate con ellas, confío en ti.
¿Algún sospechoso?
No. Según el velador, fue la última en salir del teatro.
Bueno, pero el forense declaró que a pesar de todo esto, pues no hubo ataque sexual, ¿verdad?
Bueno, no era virgen, pero no hay señales de que hubiera sido atacada.
But you know, throughout the story, we learn that, you know, there's other red herrings, right? We learn of Leon Romano, who is like a boxer, I guess. Like Felipe goes to the gym, kind of rough this guy up, and there's like luchadores in the ring, like fighting each other. There's like boxers like hitting the punching bag, and he even gets into a fight with Felipe, and then of course that guy's like, man, what are you talking about? Like you know. I'm not the killer. Like, go look at this fool over here.
¿Qué traes?
Nada, pues estoy chambeando, soy detective. Y ando realizando una investigación, señor.
¿Por qué no te metes la investigación en donde ya sabes?
No, ¿qué pasó? Mire, no se voy a molestar, pero usted es uno de los principales sospechosos del asesinato de Rebecca Brook.
Ya me divertiste. Y ahora te me largas.
Cálmese, señor Romano, por favor, hombre. ¿Qué le pasa? Es mi trabajo, entiéndalo. Tráteme bien. Cálmese. Mire nomás, ya todo el mundo está dando cuenta. Síganle, muchachos. Por favor, cálmese. Cálmese, señor Romano. Pórtese como caballero, por lo menos con las damas.
Te voy a matar, desgraciado.
That's when Susanna goes to medium Lemus's house and discovers, you know, she was the last person with the first victim, Rebecca. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of get, you know, a little intro into that family, because you have like the Señora Lemus, who's like, I don't know if it was like a HOA type of situation or she was just like a community watch leader or some shit. But for some reason, her mom, Señora Lemus, was like the fucking like the overseer. Like, she knew. Yeah, for some reason she interviewed Felipe, right? To fucking, all right, you're the cop, but the cops don't really do shit, so I expect you to do more. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, her character was a little weird, but I guess we later learned that she was like part of like a criminal underworld, who was involved with Wolf Ravinsky's character Saul. But yeah, and you know, we meet Dario in that time frame. You know, while Susanna is interviewing medium. He comes in, and of course, you know, immediately you think, yeah, this guy's a fucking red herring too. Like, he just happens to stroll up, and you know, he's very suave and
yeah, very charismatic, but then at the same time he seems really sneaky or something. He's hiding something.
Yeah, he's very very sketch, you can say. And you know, later in the movie we find out, you know, why he's a little sketch. He has a little bit of like an incestuous love affair with his sister.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another angle to put into this, right? But there's just all kinds of weird shit in here, right? Like, you know, during Felipe's like investigation, he goes to the bar that Saul runs, which is Wolf Ravinsky's character.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, a pretty famous vedette, Princesa Yamal, who you know, beautiful woman, of course, but she's on stage like fucking doing like a dance, getting naked with like a, I don't know if it was like a dude in like a monster costume or some shit.
It was a gorilla, right?
It was it's pretty dark, so you can't really see, but it's like a gorilla monster type costume. They're like, you know, getting down on stage. She's fucking, her boobs are out, and you know, they're making out. Like, it's just like one of those weird, like, I guess bars, like
it's like your typical cabaret
dance. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for, cabaret. And she's in it a couple times. She has a couple scenes across the movie where she's on stage fucking dancing, getting naked, and again, typical of the era of that style of ficheras. Mm-hmm. Like, you get one famous vedette, put her in the movie, give her a couple scenes, and you know, she's either getting naked or dancing or kissing on somebody. So it follows the formula, which is why I'm okay with saying that it's kind of like a fichera comedy style.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
But yeah, and then, you know, at this point in time, you know, it's just, you know, investigation, comedy, you know, jokes in between. There's a typical Mexico trope, right, for comedy. There's a gay character in here who, you know, is the brunt of the joke.
Of course.
You know, it never fails, right? And I don't know, man. Do we want to spoil this one?
I don't know. I feel like we could, but then it's like, damn, I don't know. I kind of want people to see it.
I'm not gonna spoil it. I don't want to say who the killer is, but you know, through the course of the investigation between Felipe and his girl Susana, they learn who the killer is, and you may or may not guess it based on just what, you know, what we're saying, but when they do finally reveal the killer, of course, there's some kind of, you know, I will say it's a man. I'm not going to say which man it is, but of course it has to deal with, you know, a man's lust towards women.
Mm-hmm. Jealousy too.
Jealousy. And, you know, of course, this person the killer wants the girl, and that's why he killed the first girl, Rebecca, in the beginning. And he could just never get over the fact that she didn't want him, so he fucking killed her, and then killed the other character in the movie for the same reason.
The revelation's pretty good. I mean, you start to guess it little by little, but it's still pretty good. You're like, oh, okay, so that's why.
Well, they do. Yeah. They do a good job of masking it. I really think that they, like, you know, with the different characters that they involve into the story, like Saul, Leon Romano, like the way they're introduced to the story, I think they hide the killer very well, leaving you guessing like a good giallo, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't really know who the killer is. You think you know. And maybe you do know. I don't know. Maybe you're good at.
I was just like, maybe. But then, no. But I see what you mean. Yeah. Especially if you're just going in straight to it without learning anything, you're like, okay, yeah.
And I do think while this movie is not a slasher, I think this movie is really fucking good.
Yeah, it's good.
And I can see a lot of people really, really being into it because it doesn't lean too heavy into comedy. You know, it doesn't lean too heavy into the police procedural. Like we said, there's, you know, the intro killing is actually pretty fucking brutal. You know, for the perverts, you know, you got your incestuous love affair,
got your cabaret dance.
Yeah. You got naked girls. Like, I mean, this movie's got everything. And I think, I don't know if we'll put the link on the bio or not, but if it is in there, you know, I highly recommend you guys to watch this movie because I think there's really a lot of good things about it that would get fans.
It's definitely entertaining. And it's pretty rare. Like, it never even got a DVD release as far as I know. It's always just been like a movie on TV, VHS. VHS is like really hard to find. I was lucky enough to find two copies, and then
Damn.
I sold the other one. The other one was a terrible copy. This one that I have now is like from Video Latino. This is probably the rarer one, if anything.
Video Latino?
Yeah, this one, I never see it like anywhere else. I've always seen the Condor one with the English title. But this Video Latino one's pretty fucking sick with the poster art and everything.
Yeah, I mean, again, like we said, you know, a couple minutes ago, like the poster art alone is really what's going to draw people in to think that it's a slasher film.
Yeah.
Or at least a horror film, yeah, which exactly. It's barely a slasher, barely a horror.
And like I always say, if I have the poster, that means I like it. And I do have the poster, too. I'll have to pull it out, but yeah.
No, yeah, there's definitely more to like about this movie than there is to dislike about it.
Yeah, I can't really say anything negative about it, other than then, you know, if you're going in thinking it's a slasher, no, it's not.
Yeah, you'll be disappointed if you go in thinking that this is going to be like a fucking, you know, a body count movie. It's just, that's just not what it is at all. But if you like Mexican comedies, if you like thrillers, if you like, you know, murder mysteries, I think people will be into it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not a bad movie at all. It's really good.
I don't know. Maybe one day it'll get released, which I doubt. But if it does, hopefully, you know.
I mean, I'm not gonna say, but I remember hearing that this was being inquired, and I was just like, I wonder why they want that.
Hey.
I'm not gonna say what label, but yeah, I saw and I heard about that, and I was like, that one? Why? Okay, cool, but why? That's so, I don't know. It was random, but yeah. But anyways, but yeah, you know, you never know. It could.
I mean, hopefully it does. Like I said, yeah, there's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to go too far into it because we have another movie to talk about. But I do think, again, you know, I'm talking in circles here, but it's a good fucking movie. Yeah. You know, people are really gonna like it.
Yeah, check it out if you get the chance. Like I said, you'll like it. You'll enjoy it. And then if you do see it, let us know. You know, like. We always want to know what you guys think.
Yeah, that's one thing. I mean, I guess I got to be more active in conversation with people. But, you know, I do kind of check after like a week or two when we talk about these movies to see if anyone's watching it and shit like that. But a couple people that I recently followed, you know, post about it and stuff, which is cool, which is exactly what we want. We want you guys to engage with us and you know, kind of start a conversation about these movies, because if we don't talk about them, then they're just going to be forgotten, you know. Exactly. Who knows if they'll ever get re-released. Who knows if you know, all the fucking tapes will end up moldy, whatever, how rare the tape is anyways, you know. If you get one, it might be moldy, unplayable. So yeah, I mean, hopefully people start watching it, start talking, and I don't know, maybe we start a Discord or something.
Yeah, something.
Yeah. Just something to get the people talking, yeah, and people get interested.
Message us. I already said, I know I take long, I'm sorry, but I will respond. Joey will respond faster than me.
Probably, yeah. I got nothing going in
even
my life.
Even I take forever to respond to Joey. I'll be like, oh shit, Joey messaged me.
I'll be like, man, what the fuck? You didn't laugh at my meme, fool. What the fuck? Anyways, you know, we digress here, but let's get into the second movie of this block. Is it a slasher or not? Episode 3. What's the next movie that we're talking about?
Well, first of all, so now we're leaving Mexico City to San Antonio, Texas, and we're going on a Verano Sangriento, a bloody summer, aka Vacaciones Sangrientas. So Verano Sangriento is the alternate title. Did you look at the TMDB or whatever, the Letterboxd? Did you see the cover?
Yeah, that was the
fucking Mil Gritos de la Noche cover.
Yeah, that was one of my note points. Yeah, the cover of this movie blatantly steals the cover for Pieces.
That was from the Mex Cinema release. I was like, oh, I'd never seen that before. Like, I mean, I saw it like years ago, but the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's cool. And it said Verano Sangriento on it. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Well, that's one thing that I wrote on my notes. I mean, I'll let you take over, yeah, but I just wanted to point it out that this movie has like alternate titles that I was like, which version? Yeah. Like, is it just the titles, or does each version have a different edit, you know?
I don't know. So the only thing is, I know the one that I have is called Vacaciones Sangrientas. And then when I first bought this movie, I thought it was the other Vacaciones Sangrientas, because there's another Vacaciones Sangrientas.
That was a couple years before this one, right?
Yeah, it was shot on video, and they shot it in Chula Vista, San Diego. And I thought it was the same movie for some reason, but this is a completely different one. So I don't know. I'm assuming Verano was the first title. This is probably just like some retitle or something.
It has to be. I think Verano works better than...
Yeah, because it's literally during the summer. I think they even mentioned in the movie that it's the summertime. So, yeah, Vacaciones Sangrientas, filmed in 1989, and I believe they released this a year after, in 1990, on video. And this was made by... Let's see, who was the director here? Jorge Manrique. And he's the son of Arturo Manrique, El Panzón Ponceco, Golden Age actor. So, you know, he's obviously comes from a famous parent. You know, nepotism, probably. And, yeah, you know, it's pretty interesting, though, because Manrique followed his same footsteps as his dad. He wanted to be an engineer like his dad, and he did TV and, you know, movies. And then he learned how to write and direct from Ismael Rodriguez and his son, Ismael Jr. And the first movies he wrote with them was Masacre en el Río Tula, Olor a Muerte, Hierba Sangrienta, Pasaporte a la Muerte. So, you know, so when you watch this Vacaciones, you understand that why he made a movie like this. It's violent, you know, something like that. And yeah, it was by him. And then we have an interesting cast. We got Raul de Anda III. He's the son of Raul de Anda Jr. Raul de Anda Jr. is the son of Raul de Anda, the famous filmmaker from the Golden Age.
Yep.
One of the pioneers of Mexican cinema, Raul de Anda. And his cousins are in this movie, Gilberto Trujillo and Raul Trujillo. And that last name doesn't sound familiar to you. I mean, those are the younger brothers of Valentin Trujillo.
Yeah, if you don't recognize those names by now, like, you're not paying attention.
Yeah, the De Andas and the Trujillos are all related, so these are all cousins and nephews, cousin nephews, or whatever you want to call them. So they're all related.
They even look alike.
I know, right? Yeah, except Gilberto. Gilberto's the chubbier one. And then it has Elizar Garcia Jr. He's the son of Elizar Garcia Chelelo. And if you don't know who Elizar Garcia Jr., you're fucking crazy.
You've seen him. He's legendary, too. Yeah.
You turn on Channel 22, Channel 62 back in the day, he was on there.
The unmistakable mustache-goatee combo. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, years later, after he passed and so forth, and maybe, like, a few years back, his son actually hit me up. He was like, oh, hey, I'm his son.
Octo. Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, Octavio. Yeah, shout out to Octo. Yeah, he hits me up. He's like, yeah, that's my dad. And he's always asking me, like, hey, do you have anything on my dad? I was like, yeah, you know, so I show him stuff, you know. I think I haven't showed him this one yet. I'll have to show him. But, yeah, so I got to learn a little bit about Elizar on his own. And it stars a leading lady by the name of Stephanie Salas. And she's pretty famous on her own, or well-known on her. She's not really famous, to be honest. So she's the granddaughter of the famous actress Silvia Pinal. Everyone knows her.
Yeah. She's absolutely legendary. Yeah.
Buñuel's actress.
The art house people would know her, right?
So that's her grandmother, and her mother is Silvia Pascual, who was another actress during the 70s and 80s. I actually didn't even know that at first. I was like, oh, they're all related. That's weird. And, yeah, during that era of the 90s when she started in this movie, she kind of was trying to be a pop singer, like, just trying to take off, like, her dad, because her dad's a singer. But it didn't really go as well, as far as I could tell. Like, I was looking it up, I was like, I don't think she really made it big, but she was trying to. Like, clearly the nepotism was trying to make her famous, but she couldn't really get too famous. And then it kind of stopped because then she ended up pregnant by Luis Miguel. She had an affair with Luis Miguel. She had his baby. He didn't really want to claim the baby at the time. It took him like years or decades to him for him to like claim the daughter and then publicly claim her too.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah. Her daughter, Michelle. So, yeah, so Stephanie Salas is probably the most recognizable face aside from the Trujillo brothers here. So the movie's about, you know, it's their typical slasher trope. It's set in San Antonio, Texas. They're going to a house. These young kids, you know, they're probably like college age, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure college
age. Yeah, they're like in college, and then they're going to go to the house in San Antonio for a party. You know, they're going to go swim in the pool, you know, just hang out. Typical. Play with the Ouija board and stuff like that.
calmados. Les propongo una cosa. Tú, Daniel, dices no creer en las cosas sobrenaturales, ¿no?
Ni más, se me hace una jalada.
Y tú, Rodolfo, dices hasta haber visto cosas. No una, sino muchas. Está bien. Les propongo una cosa. ¿Se acuerdan de la tía que tanto les había contado?
La de muchos billetes.
Esa mera. ¿Y se acuerdan también que les conté que tenía una casa en las afueras de San Antonio?
Ah, sí. Una casota con alberca y toda la cosa, ¿no?
Esa mera. ¿Y por qué creen que la dejó?
A lo mejor porque ya no le gustaba, ¿no?
No. La familia cuenta que la tía Socorro la dejó porque en esa casa pasaban cosas muy extrañas.
¿Y qué propones? ¿Que vayamos a ese lugar?
Exactamente. Así tú comprobarás tus teorías y tú te quitarás la duda.
No pensarás que vamos a ir solos, ¿verdad?
Por supuesto que no.
¿Vamos a llevar a las viejas?
Claro. ¿Sabíamos que iba a salir? Van a ver cómo nos la vamos a pasar.
Órale.
Salud.
Chúpele.
And that's pretty much it. And then the caretaker is played by Elizar Garcia Jr. And then, that's, of course, that's the red herring, as you say.
Like, it's funny how all these movies, like, there's just a random house that's been vacated for a long time with the caretaker. Like, it makes no sense, but yeah, he's definitely the first red herring.
So he's there, and he's like this big guy, kind of awkward looking. And then you're just like, oh, maybe he's probably going to be the killer, maybe? He's a little weird. He's like, you see him playing with the knife, and then he has porno, like, magazines around.
Yeah, that's
like
one of my notes. His
little room in the garage. I don't even think it was a room, right? It looked like a cardboard box or something.
It was weird. He had like a cardboard box playhouse or something.
And then, yeah, so Gilberto Trujillo's character, he's actually disabled. So, of course, you know, they keep an eye on him. He's in a wheelchair. He had an accident in that same swimming pool at the house. So he's disabled. He can't really talk. He's just in the chair. And then you can tell he seems like he's missing out on the fun. You know, he's watching everybody having fun.
He kind of felt like the Franklin character in Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah,
like,
there we go.
Like, they included him, even though he was kind of like a burden to them. Yeah. Except for, you know, like, obviously it's not his sister. In this movie, it's not his sister. But, you know, the main guy's girlfriend in this movie would be like the Sally character. Like, she took it upon herself to take care of this
boy. Yeah. And yeah, so, you know, so there's that, you know, there's that burden of him, you know, not being able to be part of the fun. They're all there chilling, having fun, playing pranks. And then all of a sudden, you know, someone gets killed. But it takes a while for them to get killed. You got one kill, and then you get the other kill, and then you're like, okay, that way, what's next? Then there's like a chainsaw scene, which was probably the best scene of all.
Yeah, it's this movie's about an hour of nothing.
Literally, nothing. And the bombarding at the house.
And then the first kill is a guy gets his hand chopped off by a hatchet.
Yeah, you get or an axe. And then someone got stabbed, right? I think.
There's a stabbing. There's like the chainsaw, like you said, is probably definitely the best kill.
Yeah,
the
chainsaw thing was really awesome. Like, oh, wow, they really went kind of hard over here. And then that's pretty much it. You know, it's just that. You know, it's just these kids having fun, killer on the loose. And then you find out who the killer is. And you're like, oh, okay. I actually didn't see that coming. That kind of caught me by surprise, actually.
Yeah, there's like the interesting, like he said, like the brother's in a wheelchair, he had an accident. So there's like an interesting history between, what was his name? Chemo? Is that what was Chemo, that? Yeah, yeah, Chemo was the caretaker, Eliezer Garcia's character. He saved Gilberto. His name was Juan in the movie. He's the guy in the wheelchair. He saved him from drowning as a kid. So they have like a little bit of an interesting history. Mm-hmm.
He cares about him.
Yeah, like they do like a flashback. It's like they do a flashback, but it's like in sepia. Like it's like what the fuck
the
is
only
going
way
out
to
here?
Do it. Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot going on in this movie.
Yeah, and that's it. And then
the guys even hate their girlfriends. You remember that? Like they like secretly went out to eat with them. Like, don't tell the girls we're gonna go eat. And the girls are like at the house, like, well, what are we gonna eat? Like,
I don't know.
There's a weird chemistry between everyone in this movie.
And then they play with the Ouija board. It's like, oh, maybe there's this supernatural element, but no. It's just this, yeah, like, you could tell they know what they were kind of trying to make, but they got lazy about it, probably. Especially the script, probably, too.
Yeah, well, it made me think, like, I mean, because a lot of movie, it, like, you know, teenage horror movies or whatever, especially in this time, you know, you had, like, Witchboard, you know, where people were, like, really, like, interested in Ouija. And Ouija was, like, a phenomenon anyways, but
yeah,
it just doesn't. It never materializes, and like nothing in this movie materializes, which is sad because you could have like a couple interesting thing happen with the Ouija board or with how they portray Chemo as being like, you know, the weird caretaker who was like, I don't think this is a good idea. You guys shouldn't be here. Like,
yeah.
But it just nothing happens. Like,
yeah, it takes a while for anything to happen. Then when you do, and then you're like, oh, okay, that's it.
Joven Javier, qué milagro, ¿qué andas haciendo por estos lugares?
Híjole, Chema, qué susto me sacaste. Te ves bien, ¿eh? Mira, te presento a Claudia, mi novia.
Mucho gusto. Encantado de conocer a la novia de Javiercito. Bueno, ¿y en qué hotel se están quedando? Porque si no lo han hecho, yo tengo uno muy bueno que recomendarles.
Es que, pues, queríamos ver si nos podíamos quedar aquí.
¿Aquí? No, joven, no la friegue. Sabe muy bien que su tía me deja órdenes estrictas de no dejar entrar a nadie sin su consentimiento.
Sí, lo sé, pero tengo una muy buena proposición que hacerte.
No empiece, joven Javier. De veras, no puedo, eso me puede costar la chamba.
¿Ni con esto?
Ándele, pues. En cuanto la señorita Socorro se dé cuenta, a ver si no me corre de la casa.
Ya te dije que no tiene por qué enterarse. Bueno. Ya nada más vamos a bajar las cosas al carro y avisarles a nuestros amigos.
¿Que no venían solos?
No, pero son pocos amigos, hombre. ¿Qué? ¿Nos ayudas a bajar las cosas?
Sí, claro que sí.
Te dije que no había bronca, hombre.
Okay.
Yeah, the movie's what, an hour and like 17 minutes or something, you know.
22 minutes.
That's the first kill happens an hour and 4 minutes into the movie.
Well, let me put it this way. Yeah, this movie may not be the best, but it's still better than WNUF Halloween Special.
Yeah, I saw you fucking hated that shit. I didn't even give it a watch, dude.
Someone's going to hear this like, "Damn, he needs to shut up about that."
All the netbangers are already crunching their keyboards right now, fool.
But this movie's a pretty bored. Like, it's kind of a chore to get through, but I don't know. I mean, I still have fun watching it. Like, I'll put it on once in a while.
I mean, look, if I think people like the shot on video slasher fools, like, if they can handle that shit, they can handle this.
They can handle that. And this wasn't even shot on video. This was like 16, so.
So there you go. And then probably transferred to tape for the editing, right?
Yeah, that computer. Remember the introduction?
I forgot about that. That was like the worst fucking intro title cards I have ever seen in my life.
The computer, you get to, it's like they did it on the, I don't even know what kind of computer that was. Probably a Mac, maybe?
Who knows, dude.
Amiga or whatever. I don't know. I don't know anything about those old computers, but yeah.
It literally looked like someone found a new feature on the editing software and was like, oh, fuck yeah, let's use it because it's fucking terrible. And then
the
way
they did the pictures, remember, of the cast? Yeah. They pop out, yeah. It's so funny.
It's like they have like, it's like the title card is like a screenshot of a house, and then it's like a 3D printing almost of like these characters. Like, yeah. It's just like layer by layer until they show their face and their name and who they're playing in this movie. Shit.
They could probably do that on After Effects, maybe.
I'm sure. And I'm sure it would be better now if you did it then.
No, but yeah. So it's not the best movie. Like, I'm not gonna be like trying to sell it to you guys. I'm gonna be honest. It's a chore to get through, but if you're really willing to watch it, hey, watch it, and you probably will like it for what it is.
I mean, look, this follows like the slasher formula, right?
It does.
I mean,
so that's the thing I was gonna say. It is a slasher. Let's just go there. Yeah.
Yeah, like you have your three couples, right? You know, mm-hmm. You have the fifth wheel, or the, I guess in this part, the seventh wheel. You know.
Yeah.
You have like the, you know, the secret family thing, because the Juan's brother in this movie doesn't know the story of the accident, like the whole time, like I don't even remember if he learns about it or not. I think we learn about it as the audience.
Yeah, like I think he kind of did remember it, but not really. Like, I think it was just like one of those things where it's like, it was just something that happened a long time ago, doesn't matter now, you know. But yeah, it's just one of those things.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna, like I said, I'm not gonna sell it to you guys. This is movie to see. It's like, if you want to see it, see it. If you don't have to.
But even the, like, there's some, like, at the end it says that this is based on a true story.
Oh, yeah. So, hey, maybe if you guys are into that. I don't know where they got that from, but yeah.
Some San Antonio lore somewhere down the in history.
Nah. If I recall, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think that was, I think that house was one of the Trujillos' kids' house.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, I think, because I remember the Trujillos would be back and forth, Mexico, Texas, California, LA, and I think the Texas was San Antonio, if I recall. So it could be, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty fucking sure that's one of the Trujillos' house.
Well, I mean, this is basically like, this house is just like a condo in a gated community.
Yeah, like, so it doesn't look like, yeah, somebody like,
there's nothing scary about it or yeah, anything.
It just looks like a regular home. So I'm pretty sure, I think, because I know they had that connection, yeah, where they lived, Mexico, Texas, California. And I think that's going to be it right there.
And there was even an, I saw, I was legitimately fucking dying laughing when I read this. There was an action coordinator for this movie.
Oh,
yeah. Like, what? There's no fucking action in this fucking movie. Like, what?
The chainsaw scene? Yeah. I don't know. Remember when he's holding the stick with the chainsaw? Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that. Or, that did or look when, real, the girl, like, when the girl got thrown off yeah, the balcony or something.
Yeah,
that too.
But that stick, yeah, it did look pretty real, though, the chainsaw scene when he's holding the stick.
And no, yeah, that was, part. See, that was pretty. That was pretty.
So that's good. The I'm funny part, because I remember a long time ago, I had uploaded that scene, I think like on Facebook or YouTube, and somebody was like, why is he using the stick on a chainsaw? And I didn't think about that. I was like, hey, wait a minute. What the fuck is that? Why is he using a stick against the fucking chainsaw? Like, it's going to get cut anyway. So that was pretty stupid, actually. Yeah.
Hey, but you know what? To that defense, man, like, if you're in that situation, you're going to do something stupid too, you know?
Like, he could have kicked him in the crotch.
You know?
Something, but
he got caught in the moment.
And yeah, he just grabbed the stick and was, like, holding it off against the chainsaw.
Cutting right
I
through
was
that
like,
bitch.
Yeah, and I was like, wait, what the fuck? Yeah, that is stupid. So, yeah, it is what it is. But, yeah, like I said, I'm not going to sell it to you guys. This is a great movie, or run off to see it. But if you want to see it, hey, check it out. You know, let me know what you think. You know, I want to hear other people's opinions on it. Because I am curious now. It's like, well, what did you guys think of that chainsaw scene?
Yeah, I guess I should have checked, like, the Letterboxd ratings, if there even is any on here. But I would assume they're low if there is any on there.
There's going to be one guy that's like, yeah, it's brutal. Chainsaw.
Fucking Mexican slasher, bro.
Yeah. But it is a slasher. I'm not going to say it's not.
Yeah, no.
But it's not the best for trying.
Yeah, I would definitely say that this is a slasher, but... Again, you know, it takes a while to happen.
Yeah, it takes a good while, yeah.
But, you know, again, like, there's a lot of slashes out there, for this, especially the low-budget ones that are the same, where nothing fucking happens for an hour.
And they get 4K releases. Yeah. They get cult followings.
That's, I mean...
They get sold at Walmart. No, I'm just kidding. I need to stop bagging on that movie. I just had to do it.
Well, you know, I can see this type of movie being sold at a Walmart in like fucking somewhere South Texas or some shit.
Imagine
for the San Antonio market. Shout out to San Antonio.
Yeah, I don't even know if they got a DVD. But I don't think so. But hey, you never know. But yeah, so slasher, not a slasher. Which one was the best out of the two, you think?
For me, all day, Agarrote Limpio. And even if we weren't doing an episode on slashers or not, I would say Agarrote Limpio is a really good fucking movie.
Yeah. Good cast, good director, producer, writer. Vacaciones Sangrientas. They were like, hey, these horror movies are selling. Let's make one. We don't have enough money. Let's just go to do it at the house in San Antonio.
Just get a couple actors and a camera.
Elizard's already in Texas because that's where he was based at the time, too. So, see.
I mean, you know.
It was all a spur of the moment, more than likely.
I mean, it's, you know, again, you know, talking in circles, but it's just, it's the same model everywhere, you know. You get a little bit of money, yeah. Throw a couple, you know, young actors together, throw them in a fucking house with a killer and see what happens. We didn't even spoil the end of this one, which I think I don't want to spoil it because I thought it was the ending was pretty funny actually.
Yeah.
I don't know if funny is the right word. I guess ironic or I don't know, but
yeah, it would be ironic if anything. Yeah.
But you know, I think slasher fans will enjoy it for what it is, at least. At least have some kind of a little bit of respect for it, because, you know, there's, it's not like it's any worse than any other fucking generic slasher that's out there. But yeah, it just happens that it's super low budget and it's you know, a Mexican movie.
And it's cheap.
And it's super cheap, yeah. You know, like we did in the first two episodes, we asked a couple people to give us their thoughts on whether or not these are slashers and if they're even good movies. But as of this recording, we only have one person that submitted it. So, you know, it may be one person, it may be three people, or maybe four people. I don't know. But, you know, we'll play that right now. And, yeah, I think the last episode, you know, there's a real gem, rare gem in that one that that we're excited about.
Yeah, I paid too much money for it, so you guys better listen to this episode.
Hey, you know what, though? We all chase these fucking grails. Whether we're collecting tapes, records, or whatever the case is, we all got that grail that we got to pay ridiculous amounts of money for.
Unfortunately.
It is what it is, right? So, yeah, here's a couple people and their thoughts, and then of course following that will be a little teaser for the final episode of Oye Bro, Es un Slasher.
Bro, I got a message the other day too.
Oh shit! See, the episodes worked.
I guess, or maybe if I didn't even see, they just asked me.
Well, we'll leave it up to you guys to decide whether these movies are slashers or not.
Yeah, let us know.
And let us know, and of course follow us, tag us. Tell your theas, give us reviews on whatever platform you use to listen to us, and yeah, man, spread the word. Let's start a community.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. This is Alfonso here from the Rendezvous LA Collective, or DJ Alfonso, if you will, from the Severin Films podcast for Rendezvous After Hours, and I want to give a big thanks to Joey and Armando from Trash Mex for inviting me to be on this show and contribute a little something. And today I'm going to be talking about Vacaciones Sangrientas and Agarrote Limpio, two very interesting Mexican films that we're going to be talking about and deciding whether or not they are indeed slashers, because that is the whole theme of the podcast today. So I'm going to start off first with Agarrote Limpio. So this one at first kind of seems like a slasher in the sense that there's a killer, there's, you know, dead people getting stabbed at the very beginning and whatnot. But once the movie gets up and running, you're going to see that it's not a slasher. So spoiler alert, it's not a slasher. It's more, well, this is all, of course, in my opinion. I think it's more like it's a crime comedy is what it is, with a splash of murder and a whole lot of just random humor. There's like an investigator, this dude, Felipe, who's investigating a series of murders involving wealthy women. But he spends a lot of time just goofing around and arguing with his younger girlfriend and going into nightclubs and as well as solving crimes on the side. So it's very much is, quite slapstick, and there's not a whole lot of suspense or horror. It does get a little weird, like some weird comedy bits, like there's a nightclub act with a woman dancing and a guy in a gorilla suit. It's very, you know, awkward romantic scenes and jokes that are just straight out of a sex comedy. And then out of nowhere, you know, people get stabbed. Somebody gets stabbed with an ice pick. And that's pretty much it. I mean, it's not really a slasher. So the focus in this movie, and I'm going off my notes here, so bear with me, but it's more on the detective himself than the killer or the victims. Most of the deaths happen off screen very quickly. There's no masked man stalking around. You know, the movie's, you know, it's funny. It's got some cabaret numbers, lots of sex jokes, and, you know, a crime drama. So while it does feature murders, it's not a slasher. It's more of a, like a light, it's like a giallo with jokes, almost, kind of, sort of. So that is all about Garrote Limpio, and now we are going to move over to Vacaciones Sangrientas. And this one, I feel, is much more a slasher-type mold. I'm still hesitant to say it's a slasher because there's not a whole lot of killing in it, and there's really no motive. The killer just, there's no backstory to this guy. He just looks angry, and he's staring at himself in the reflection of his knife in some scenes. It's very, very bizarre. But it is definitely much more slasher-ish, I should say, than Agarrote Limpio. Definitely much more. It's a group of mid-20, I would say, young people, and they're in a remote cabin, and they're going on a getaway. And at this cabin, they're drinking, they're flirting with each other, they're playing strip poker, even though it's not really strip poker. Nobody gets naked. And they're basically wasting time. And then there's this silent murderer guy. We don't know anything about this guy. And he's just very angry, and he's got an axe. There's no name to him, no backstory, there's no motive at all. He's just angry and chopping. You don't really know what he's doing. But, like I said, it's got the remote setting. It's got a group of young adults acting like goofy teenagers. And there's this hatchet guy. And with one-by-one murders, even though most of the murders are off-screen, the blood effects is very minimal. It's basically a bottle of fake blood that they splash on somebody. The camera pans out and pans back, and there's blood on somebody. And then there's this part that I was... let me tell you this. There's an actor, there's one of the teenagers, he's in a wheelchair, and he's supposed to be, you know, handicapped or whatever. And I found myself laughing at him. And then I thought, like, okay, this got to be a joke, right? This guy cannot be really handicapped. And obviously he's not. It's just some actor dude who's just pretending to be. So I'm like, okay, these people are whoever came up with this idea. If the guy legitimately is not physically challenged, you're going to hell if you laugh at this. All right, so there you go. It's a slasher. Yes, it's cheap. It's barely functional. It's shot on video. It's goofy. It's one of those movies that would be great in the background of a party or something like that. I mean, you should give it a watch, of course, but it's not nothing that's going to be a repeat visit. And ladies and gentlemen, there you go. Those are my wrap-up of the two films, and thank you for listening. Thanks again, Joey and Armando. Viva Trashmex.
Próximamente estrenaremos...
Tú eres Nancy, mi hijita Nancy. Señora, aquí está la pijama del niño. La pijama de la niña es esta. Así que se la pones, estúpida. Vieja loca, ni crea que te voy a poner ese pijama de mujercita y deja esa muñeca. Ay, qué bueno que te voy a quitar este cochino vestido.
Martina, a mamá.